If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this new edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast. Now, despite reaching the end of the road season, there is still plenty going on in domestic cycling, not least with the continued progress of British Cycling's task force. Now, this is a panel of eight experts handpicked by British Cycling CEO John Dutton to consider the future of British road racing. Phil, you of course are one of the panelists. Can you bring us up to speed with the progress made so far?
Yeah, it's good, Tim. And I know at the moment people haven't heard very much. And the reason for that is because we're having to spend an awful lot of time in what I call phase one of really what is at least a five-stage problem diagnosis, discovery and sort of direction you would use to try and address something as significant as this challenge. We have met four times, and I just want to put that in context to people. That at the moment is over Microsoft Teams. We're giving up our evenings on a Monday between sort of 6 and 7:30, between 6 and 8. So to put that in some context, that's about 6 to 7 hours worth of talking time at the moment. So just to sort of make that clear. Now, when you're dealing with a problem of this size, that's absolutely common that you would spend that amount of time or more in this diagnosis phase, where you've got to start to hear the opinions that people have already on the task force. And of course, we've got the different disciplines of the community in the task force, from riders to organisers to commercial people. But all of those people also have a huge amount of first level contacts in the sport. So the riders know other riders, the organisers know other organisers, the team managers know other team managers, commercial people know other commercial people. So the network we can draw upon to sort of bring opinion together is very, very vast. So in this sort of in these initial meetings, what we are trying to get to is to try and get at least as much of the contributory factors on the table, whether they be minor or major. So if there's a contributory factor which we felt has somehow got us to where we are, then we're capturing that and we're just recording that. And this is what we call the diagnosis phase. So we are getting to the point of, from the initial task force members, trying to at least get all of the issues highlighted, however big or small they are. And I think we're doing quite a good job of that at the moment. And people, let me also say, it's totally unfiltered feedback. There's a lot of uncomfortable truths being raised across all the different discussion points, and nothing's off the table as far as raising it. And I think that's really, really important that, I guess, listeners hear that, that people who are wondering what the task force are up to are understanding that it is, at the moment, yes, there's a lot of talking, but it's not a talking shop. There's a very structured process that we're going through, which we're only really in phase one of five phases. However, the discussion that has been had is of a very good quality. Lots has already been captured.
Well, it sounds like the structure is already paying dividends. As you say, on the one hand, you have unfiltered feedback. And on the other, I know you've done a deep dive into the underlying data.
Yeah, without a doubt. Again, in corporate world, Tim, you wouldn't just sort of bring all these people together and go, what do you think? You have to start from analytics and data. And so, you know, the task force have got full access to the data and analytics team at British Cycling. So there have been really, really good insights delivered back to us where we've gone, well, we want to understand where we are now, but we also want to understand from, let's say, 2015 season, when things were perhaps very, very different, where we had sort of six Conti teams and a thriving scene and all those sorts of things. What was the data that sat behind that? You know, how many race entries were there? How much was it to race? How many racing days a year were there? So for the men's scene and the women's scene. So we've got all those analytics sitting behind that now, including what the races were, where the races were, how many entries were going in each individual race, etc. And that is allowing us to then understand a landscape. So you can properly understand between that point in time a point in time in 2019, just before COVID and now, and you can compare them and go, okay, we've gone from this to this. You can then begin to understand why. Was it certain races dropping out? Have the racing days come out? What's happened to costs? How many participants were there? So is the scene thriving or is it not in terms of the analytics? We've got all of that. So, you know, everyone is listening who's got, you know, an interest in the outputs here needs to understand we're doing a lot of really good due diligence here so that when we get to this perhaps end state, which is how can we try and give some pointers to British cycling to say maybe think about this, think about that, or think about this, that they're well-reasoned. Everybody will understand that they've been listened to. And then once the plan comes out, perhaps then of what can be done and when, that there's some good rational thinking behind that. And so I think sometime in the next couple of weeks, what you will hear is some initial communication coming from the task force, from the chair, Ed Clancy, where he'll begin to reveal some of those perhaps key things. We can't list everything. There's so much. There's literally like hundreds of points coming at the moment of potential discussion. But we will highlight what I think will be the key things. And then Ed will then communicate what those key initial things are, so that everybody can understand what it is we've been talking about.
Well, that's good to know. A statement from Ed, I think, can only be welcomed. Transparency is key, I think, to the continued credibility of the exercise in the eyes of the wider public.
Yes, when you're dealing with big problems, the reason why sometimes task force become talking shops is because there isn't a structure or a framework around them. That's when you create talking shops. And having been in business now for 30 years, one thing I do know is how to structure these things in order that they don't become talking shops. And once you get phases clear and clarity about what it is we're going to do in each of those phases, what that means is when you are in that discussion phase, you can park and pause conversations if they're not massively relevant to the point that you're currently trying to talk about. And you can park them and go, okay, you want to raise this issue. It's not a today discussion. It's a phase three discussion. So we'll park that and come back to it. So what that means is you get a much more efficient conversation. So rather than let's try and talk about everything. If we just sat in a room and tried to talk about everything and then tried to solve everything and come up with lots of ideas all at the same time, you are designing a talking shop, without a doubt. Been there many times in my corporate past. So by just applying a simple framework to this discussion, what we're able to do is, I think, be much more productive in these conversations. So where we've got to now in terms of the capture of information is really, really good. And the next phase we'll move into now is an even greater amount of, in inverted commas, sorry for the bingo here, folks, stakeholder engagement, where we've identified much wider groups of people where the task force want to go away now and have deeper conversations with them to make sure we've captured as much as we possibly can. As much as we possibly can in terms of feedback and detail from the major stakeholders involved in this thing called elite road racing, National A Series particularly. So once we've got all that together, then we can really begin to get to grips with generating ideas, solutions, and a pathway forward.
Well, that's entirely realistic. I mean, Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither will a thriving elite British road scene. It is going to take time. But again, the goodwill that surrounds this project will hopefully carry it through.
And one, I think, really important thing here that I think it's worth raising is if somebody came tomorrow and wrote a cheque for £20 million and said, design the race series in the UK, I don't think we'd have any difficulty putting it all together. The commercial realities are that the commercial environment is very, very difficult. And as a result, we, I think, have to set expectations that there is going to be no easy answer in this. There will be a set of recommendations, perhaps, that may be output, but all those recommendations are not going to be immediately implementable. Some of them will be about setting a direction of travel where you need to build the commercial sustainability, perhaps over several years. But the main thing is that perhaps as long as that's clear to people, and I think as long as people understand that there's a direction of travel to address things, that might be the output that we can deliver. It's not going to be everything's going to be solved in 2024, and haven't we done a good job? My view is actually the roadmap to this may take some years to fully resolve.
Well, despite the challenges faced by the domestic road scene, young British riders continue to graduate, that's the right phrase, to the professional ranks in impressive numbers. Cat Ferguson, for example, has been signed from Shipton Hopetech Apex by Movie Star Team, and Jack Rootkin Gray has been signed from St. Piran by EF Education Easy Post. Now, another young British rider preparing to join Jonathan Vaughter's World Tour squad next season is Lucas Nuruka, a 19-year-old from Brighton who spent the last two seasons with Trinity Racing. Lucas has already led a fascinating life. His father is Richard Nuruka, the former British Olympian 10,000-metre and marathon runner, and Lucas spent the first 7 years of his life in Addis Ababa, the Ethiopian capital. Let's hear now from Lucas on how he is anticipating the next phase of his career with EF Education Easy Post.
Yeah, really excited. It's come about quite quickly since the start of the year, but now I'm looking forward to joining them. It's an English-speaking team, and I'm currently living with Ben Healy. So yeah, I've been living with him for about a year now. Yeah, that helps. And then just living in Girona as well, you meet lots of different riders. A few of them are also joining EF, like Archie Ryan and Rafferty. So yeah, there's a good group of us out here now. I think I've always been exposed to sport. It's always been something my whole family's done. It's never really been something that's like been forced upon us. It's just both me and my sister, we've always done lots of sport, with that running, swimming, cycling, gymnastics, all of that. So yeah, it's always been part of my life. And then it's only really when I moved back to the UK that I started getting more serious with my cycling, like joining a local club and doing some racing. Yeah, it was around that time as well I decided to focus more on cycling than doing running and other sports as well. I was cycling in Ethiopia. We had some friends bring out a bike to me when I was like three. So I started when I was then. My dad used to just take me out up Mount Entoto, which is actually where a lot of the runners do their training. Yeah, it's just a lot quieter up there. Like, where in the city, it's pretty dangerous to ride a bike. I mean, I did it occasionally, but Mount Entoto was definitely my favorite spot to ride. It was pretty quiet up in the hills. Yeah, so that's where it all started. Both me and my sister weren't quite ready for British winters. In Ethiopia, they don't really have the same four seasons as you do in the UK. It's more just a very long summer and then 2 or 3 months of heavy rainfall. So yeah, we were used to that, but it never really got that cold. Whereas in the UK, especially I think the first winter here, we had snow. So that was, that was something. It all started to come a bit more together as a junior. Hard to say how much my dad's background has helped me. I think it's probably helped me a bit more just in terms of his way of approaching things. And I can even see that now. He's, even though he's not competing, he still carries the same mindset and what he does now. Yeah, so that's helped me. And I've always enjoyed the process of training, which I think helps a lot. And it's different in cycling. You have a lot more race days. Whereas, yeah, when my dad was competing in marathons, you do two marathons a year and then a handful of small road races leading up to it. Whereas in cycling, you're racing quite a bit from February to October. So it's a different outlook on it. But I think just enjoying the process and enjoying the training behind it is a really important part of both sports. When I joined Trinity Racing, I was, didn't really know anything about bike racing, I'd say. I'd been strong as a junior, but I didn't know anything involved in being a bike racer, just being full-time and stuff like this. So that was probably the biggest learning experience, not just on the bike, but off the bike. And yeah, that's where having guys around me who sort of knew more what they were doing helped a lot. And then, yeah, of course, we have a great DSs last year. We had Stannard this year. We got Pete and John. So having those guys who have sort of done it and know what it's about has been huge.
So great to hear there from Lucas. It's been another very successful season, Phil, in terms of young British talent riding the escalator to the World Tour. Despite all the headwinds, the Brit pack isn't showing any signs of slowing down.
Absolutely not. And I think that's just brilliant. I think we've got to go all credit to people like Trinity and St. Piran for doing what it takes to be a Conti race team, providing the platform, because clearly that is the feeders into now World Tour. So we talked on the last episode, didn't we, about kind of how the conventions of the conveyor belt are changing, and now the World Tour are dipping straight into domestic riders, perhaps even with less experienced domestic riders, and just bunging them straight into the Premier League of cycling. It's quite incredible. So I think we have to sort of also understand that when we think about some of these challenges we're trying to solve within the task force about what the National Road Series looks like. Because clearly the World Tour teams want to see riders who've had competitive racing experiences. And it may not be that they need to have raced in Belgium for 2 years or 3 years. They're just going, no, actually, we can bring you straight over, whack you in as a development rider, and we'll back you from a younger age. So that's quite a change in the dynamic that the sport actually works. But all credit to these riders, because they wouldn't be going up there if they're not capable. There's a huge pool of talent across the globe. And I think it's fantastic that GB is still outputting people that are going in and representing the country in these international World Tour teams. It's brilliant.
And conversely, some of the riders from that international pool are coming here. Luglan Percy, America's youngest ever national crit race champion, is a teammate of Lucas at Trinity Racing, and next year will join Sudal Quickstep, having won the Lincoln Grand Prix last year and the Cycle Classic this year.
Without a doubt. And if you look at perhaps who's behind, you know, Trinity, you've obviously got Andrew McQuaid there, who, you know, is a rider agent in his own right. So he's got a huge amount of contacts in the World Tour. And if you look over at the Rainer Foundation and people who sit behind in the sort of the shadows of the Rainer Foundation, people like Tim Harris, again, huge number of connections in the World Tour. So there's a sort of an informal network going on behind the scenes here where contacts that the foundation has or certain content teams have into the World Tour is allowing these sort of routes to open up effectively, perhaps more efficiently and effectively than they have done in the past.
While we're on the topic of young British riders graduating to the UCI World Tour, let's turn our attention to an organisation that does more than any to help turn dreams into reality. I caught up with Joss Ryan, mover and shaker-in-chief at the Rainer Foundation, a charity helping young British riders to realise their dream of turning professional by racing abroad, to hear about their latest successes, the exceptional class of 2022, and next month's vitally important annual dinner and auction at the Leeds Armouries.
The dinner has been perhaps a little bit problematic because we've had 2 years missed because of the pandemic, of course. I must admit, it was difficult last year to get the enthusiasm start again. But last year's dinner was a huge success. Everybody had a great time. And then we're hoping to, you know, carry on and do that again. But it is very difficult. So we need people to come along, enjoy themselves, understand a little bit more about perhaps what we do, support us if they can. You know, donations are always welcome. We want to try to create a community of people that support us. And we try and do that on the social media. We're quite big on that. And it's just to sort of make sure that everybody knows who we are, what we do. And, you know, you're part of a family. You're part of our community. And we want you to come along and enjoy yourselves. Because, you know, there's not many club dinners these days. I'm talking about club dinners of the old school, you know, that we all used to know a few years ago. Not many of those now, but we're trying to replicate that atmosphere. You know, everybody welcome, everybody mucking in, and you're always going to know someone, or if you don't know them, you will by the end of the evening. I'm sure that everybody would love to come to the dinner, but of course it's not possible for a lot of riders. They are waiting to find out what their obligations are to their teams. It's a bit of a sort of a tricky moment, November. They might have their own personal holidays, they might live abroad full time, or they might be needed on a team training camp or get to know you type of camp, which is often takes place in November. So, you know, we are waiting, we are hoping, and we're sure that we'll have some big names there, but we can't reveal anything at the moment. It was amazing. Last year, we had more riders turn professional than we've ever had before. Some years, we've had no riders turn professional. Not to say that that year was a particular bad one, because obviously those riders may have gone on and in subsequent years turn professional, but it has been known that we've had nobody. So last year was incredible. We had 5 male riders and 2 female riders sign professional contracts. That's really is a record. We've got two confirmed professional contracts. We've got Oliver Knight has now been confirmed with a contract with Cofidis. He's already been riding for them as a stagiaire this year. You know, he's revealed that he's been under their wing now since the beginning of the season, actually. They've been helping him out, etc. So now he's confirmed. And we've now got Tom Portsmouth, who also has signed a professional contract with the Bingle team. He's been riding for their development team for the last 2 years, this year and last year. Before that, he was in another team at a club in Belgium. So he's come a long way as well. And you never know, we might have some more. That's what we're hoping anyway. But that news to follow.
So great to hear that from Joss. Now, although she wasn't able to confirm the guest list yet, after last year, when Fred Wright, Jake Stewart, Alice Towers, Matt Walls, Ethan Vernon were all in attendance, it seems fair to say that there'll be a strong presence from the World Tour this year too. And you'll be heading along as well, Phil, I think.
Yeah, it's sort of one of those de facto events now that I go to every year. I mean, for many years, I wasn't able to get there. But what I realised was actually this was, for a number of reasons, really, it's great networking. You can definitely meet lots of really good people who are in the sport. A lot of these future riders who are going to be the stars of tomorrow are in the room. But more importantly, by attending, by buying a ticket, you are helping the Rainer Foundation to give money directly to these up-and-coming riders to go away and go abroad and experience racing abroad. That's the fundamentals. So if you really are passionate about the road scene, for example, then in my view, if you can afford it, and I'm not saying everybody can, but I will say this one thing, that they price the tickets very, very competitively in order that it's not elitist. It's not £3,000 a table. Ticket's about 60 quid. And for that, you get your dinner. And of course, you get to be in the room, you see the awards, and you get to network with all these people. So in my view, it's a very, very well-priced evening awards dinner. So I messaged Joss this morning just to say, because I've bought some fantastic prizes from the Rainer Fund dinner over the years, you know, signed jerseys and stuff, and just said, oh, you know, what have we got coming up this year, Joss? What have you got? And so she dropped me a quick WhatsApp back saying that she's already got a World Champions jersey signed by Tom Pidcock, which will go up for auction. She's got a jersey from the Tour de France via Fred Wright, signed by the entire Bahrain Victorious team that raced the Tour de France this year, plus an endless list of other things. So if you fancy, for example, a decent jersey signed by a World Tour pro, then that auction that goes on that night is a very, very good place, good one to participate in. And then they have all of these additional experiences, for example, the Ineos Grenadiers training camp in Mallorca. That was on last year's auction, which I tried desperately to win, but I got outbid in the end. So please come along, really help out the foundation. By being in that room, you're not only going to have a great night, in my opinion, but actually you're also going to be helping the future generation to build their careers in professional cycling.
Well, having looked ahead to next month's Rainer Foundation dinner and auction, let's reflect now on the Brother UK-sponsored Tour of Britain, which we previewed in our previous episode. The race went off without a hitch, despite the absence of a title sponsor, and after five straight victories from the opening five stages for Jumbo-Visma, leading man Wout van Aert was made to work hard for overall victory on a thrilling final stage from Margam Park to Caerphilly. Phil, how will you remember this 19th edition of the modern Tour of Britain?
Well, I hope it will be remembered for perhaps the last 2 days of racing, which were very exciting. However, I know there was divided opinion about the race format for 2023. And I think for me, I'm just stepping back on this and going, I'm just grateful there was a Tour of Britain and it didn't have to go under hiatus. And I spent in the Manchester stage and the Wrexham stage a lot of time with the chair of Sweet Spot, Hugh. And so I was able to have a lot of discussion with him about where things are at, what you're feeling, you know, about next year. Do you think you can solve the issue, all that sort of stuff. You know, they're very positive about the work they're now doing to try and find these high level sponsors for next year for the Women's Tour and of course the Tour of Britain. And we note that they've submitted applications to run both races. So all very, very confident. So as a fan watching it, I think maybe by day three, we were sort of going, okay, this is becoming a bit predictable in terms of how this might work. You know, breakaway goes away. Harry Tanfield gets in the break again. Off they go up the road. It all gets reeled in. Jumbo-Visma win with a Wout van Aert lead out. So that's sort of how things worked, wasn't it? Probably up to maybe really day 7 and 8. And I was chatting with someone about this the other day just to say, well, it really did tee up those last 2 days, because I think the other thing that really was coming out strongly was because there was no bonus seconds on the line, then this meant that actually, even if you look at the final GC, the difference between the winner and the 10th rider was 28 seconds. The difference between the winner and positions 2, 3, and 4 was 3 seconds. So it did really make, I think, for a very exciting stage 8. And that Caerphilly Mountain stage was excellent. I thought at one stage, Van Aert was out of it. Literally, I thought he was out of it. But he came back, didn't he? He came back and took the ultimate win. And I think that stage 8 was brilliant racing. And if I look at it and go, was it worth sitting through those 6 sort of flat days? Well, do you know what? For some of the domestic Conti teams to be out there and look, doing their bit for their sponsors, that's fine. I'm all right with that. You know, Harry Tanfield, it was exciting to see him sort of work to get in the break every day. So was it the most exciting of racing for those first 6 days? No, quite predictable, but I'm glad it was on. Last 2 days probably couldn't have happened without the first 6 days. That created the showdown, didn't it? And they were really exciting. So I've got to say, for me, I was totally cool with it, and I'm just glad it was on, and it was fantastic to see live racing on the telly, on ITV4, every day.
Yep, chapeau to Sweet Spot, and to ITV4 and GCN+, who even featured our state-of-the-art Brother Industries recycling facility near Wrexham in their coverage of Stage 2. I mean, live television is a major part of the Tour of Britain's commercial proposition. You were on the ground too, Phil. You were at the Manchester stage, you were at the Wrexham stage. We're very close to it, of course, but what was the reaction of the man and the woman on the street, so to speak?
There were massive crowds out on stage 1. I mean, they were massive in the Altrincham to Manchester. So I nipped over to Altrincham in the morning and just sort of had a good look around. And I thought initially I was expecting more people out, but literally half an hour before the race, it just went bang. And I went from Altrincham down to a place called Hale, which is about 1 kilometre away from kilometre zero. And literally 20 minutes before the race, I was thinking, there's hardly anybody out. This is a disaster. But the streets just went about 10 deep about 15 minutes before the race rolled through. So it was great. It was really, really great. And Manchester itself was absolutely packed. Beautiful day. Hospitality was heaving. The city centre was heaving. You know, it was exactly what we thought it was going to be. So nipped over to Wrexham, obviously, the next day, because that's where our facility is there. And again, big crowds were out. There were big crowds out. And I was really, really pleased to see that. And of course, it was a shorter stage that day. You know, some people were saying, oh, why was the stage so short? And the reality is, one of the key stakeholders who pulled out at the last minute, so it would have been a longer stage. So they had to reconfigure that stage at short notice. So it ended up being 109.5 kilometres. But it was raced really quickly, wasn't it? And still a good stage. Helicopter was up, showed off Wales to its full capability. And I really enjoyed it. And I was watching and recorded almost the whole race live, and was getting home from work each day and sitting through it, much to Mrs. Jones's annoyance, you know, just sitting through the stages just to see how the racing was. It was good. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Well, the Tour of Britain typically represents the climax of the road season in Britain, but we shouldn't overlook the concluding round of British cycling's flagship National Road Series in Stamfordham. National Road Series, of course, is the competition in which both of our sponsored teams compete, Brother UK Orientation Marketing and Hutchinson Brother UK. Now, the men's Beaumont Trophy was won by Finn Crockett for St Pirren, while the women's Curlew Cup was won by Corinne Side for Pro Noctis Heidi Kjeldsen 200 Degrees Coffee. That meant that the individual series winners were Zeb Kiffin of St Pirren and Monica Greenwood of Das Hansling, and their respective teams took overall victory in the teams competition too. Now, before we dissect this year's National Road Series, Phil, let's have a listen to Ian Watson, the manager of Hutchinson Brother UK, and his South African star, Tiffany Keep,
National Road Series has been great for us. We've had some good successes in pretty much every round. And yeah, it's been a great confident boost to the riders, learning curves for the riders. You know, we've been pretty much in every breakaway that's gone in the races, and we just capitalised on it from round to round. And yeah, it just got better and better for us. So we're very happy with how that went. Yeah, third overall in the series. Yeah, we're pleased with it. We would have liked higher, I'm not going to lie. We were second position going into the last round, but that's bike racing, you know. Overall, we're really happy with the individual performances. As much as we want the team prize, and the team prize is great, I always instill that we're looking for individual performances. So as long as we get the riders to take chances during the race, be brave, go for opportunities and try and win the event themselves, then the team competitions will come. So overall, third is great, you know, all three teams in the top three are good teams, you know, but we've had some great individual performances amongst that, you know, with winning one round and second in another. And like I say, being in pretty much every breakaway that there was in the series. So we're coming away with our heads held high and quite proud, yeah. But highlight moment, it's hard to pinpoint at the moment because I'm just finished the season now and trying to recap on what it all is. And sometimes, you know, as a manager, you're kind of, as much success as you have, you're looking at the next race and the next race, you know, and it's difficult. I think I'm just really proud of the team, that what they've done this year and what they've achieved. You know, we've had some great wins. We've had some good podiums in some big, big races, both here and abroad. I just can't be happy how they've done. And the way I know I've got it right with the team is that it's just how they are off the bike, you know. I think it was in the Raz, I was sitting around the dinner table and everyone's just laughing their heads off and just messing about having the tea. And that's when you know that you've got a good team and you've done something right, you know. Or when we're away and they go off on the recce ride and I see them all riding off in the team kit, just training, you know. They're the nice moments for me, to be honest with you. It sounds weird, doesn't it? As good as the racing is, they're the bits where I think, yeah, this is something special, you know, we got something good here.
The National Road Series this year, I think, was a sign of how I've been able to progress as a cyclist this year, really. And my consistent progression throughout the series was something I'm very proud of. It literally went from just one position and difference between Lancaster and Lincoln, and then kind of leapfrogging up to second place at Rydale. I was a bit disappointed I couldn't partake in the final round of Curlew. Well, firstly, disappointed that the final round was postponed, and I then fell ill directly after the Raz. But I would have really liked to give Curlew a good go and see if I could go for the win. But I was really happy with my progression throughout the series this year. I think we were able to try a lot of new things as a team as well and put together some good teamwork for the other races. I was really happy to give it my best shots in the penultimate round at Rydale and managed to get onto the podium, which I was really stoked with. There's a reason why I came halfway across the world to race here, and I really believe in the potential that the women's racing scene in the UK has. This is kind of really speaks for itself in the way that you look every single year. There are more and more riders going world tour from the UK, and I actually get a bit frustrated when people kind of draw comparisons to the men's and women's racing. I feel like the men's racing situation is completely different to the women's, where I feel like women's teams are growing and the racing itself is getting a lot more competitive, and the fields are also growing and the depth, and this is all really positive. And I wish people would talk about that more rather than kind of being degrading of it and speaking negatively about the state of the racing in the UK. I came over here with the hopes of getting some good hard racing in and learning a lot more about myself and how to race as a team. And I feel like I've been able to do exactly that in a really positive environment. And I've really loved my time over here and the type of racing we get to do. We get to race all over the country and a whole variety of different courses. You have everything from ranging from Sickle Classic, where you race along some gravel roads, to Lincoln, where you get to a bit of a taste of cobbles, to the grippy roads of Yorkshire, or Lancaster and Rydale and Curlew. There's really a bit of everything. And I think people should embrace that more. As a foreigner, I've thoroughly enjoyed my time racing over here.
So great to hear that from Ian and from Tiffany. Phil, how should we address this year's National Road Series? It attracted a lot of controversy, primarily for the scarcity of the rounds, but the racing, particularly on the women's side, was competitive. I mean, 5 rounds for women, 4 rounds for men. Is it a National Series worthy of the name?
Well, good question. And that's one, of course, we're wrestling with the task force behind the scenes working with British Cycling at the moment. If we look back, I guess, to the glory days of perhaps 2015 when we had a very different racing environment, then clearly there was a lot more racing, more continental teams, more money, more everything. Given everything that's going on with the economy, local authorities, and the wider environment of race organisers not being around in the sort of volume, nowhere near the volume of races that we used to have, style, type, geography, all those things, then clearly what we currently have is what we currently have. We're just here where we are. So it is what it is. Is that what we want for the future? No. But was it competitively raced the rounds that we did have? Then I would say the answer to that is yes. Particularly, I think the women's racing was very, very exciting and very close this year. So very much in a bit of a reset year, I think, as far as the National Road Series is concerned. And everybody wants it to be better with more races, better geographical spread, and of course, with more teams competing so that the style of the racing is also the sort of racing that we want to watch.
Well, I think you make a very good point when you talk about the competitiveness of the women's scene. We heard Tiffany say, didn't we? She's getting fed up of the negativity surrounding the men's scene, reflecting on the women's scene, which she says has never been so competitive. I mean, given all that, just how impressive is Hutchinson Brother UK's achievement in finishing third this year?
Yeah, all credit to Ian. I know how hard he works in the background. And of course, Ian's not just running this team. Ian is running a complete conveyor belt, right from riders who've never ridden before and just starting out, right the way up to what you're seeing here with this development team and another team in between. So his objective is to make sure that the conveyor belt is really moving. And I think if we look at what's happened in the 2023 season, Tiffany has had a particularly good season in 2023. She's really looks like she's found her form, really found her legs, is finding her way in British domestic racing. And of course, we've spoken about Lucia as well on Ian's team. You know, again, really come into 2023 season, really pushing on long breakaways, race wins. So I think Ian will definitely be wrapping up 2023 thinking like he's done pretty well. But I know he's got big ambitions for 2024 about how he wants to push on and really become even better and even more competitive.
While we're on the topic of competitive women's racing, we certainly shouldn't overlook the Rasna Barn, Ireland's leading stage race for women, and an event that we previewed in our last episode. Now, Tiffany won stage two and finished third overall, but let's reflect on the Ras through the prism of Brother UK Orientation Marketing, which is a youthful outfit comprised mainly of junior riders. Here's Mark Botley, who's been taking teams to the Ras for years, including talents like Anna Henderson, who now, of course, races for Jumbo-Visma.
The Rasna Barn is a fantastically brilliant race for the development of riders, and ultimately the girls that have in the team that the most they've ever done in the way of a stage race is kind of maybe a couple of days, and that there'll probably be a 2 mile prologue in there. So it's, you know, we're talking about a completely different ball game. My aim for doing the race is literally just to kind of help kind of cement everything the girls have learned throughout the year, starting with a team training camp and just basically being teammates and pulling together and looking out for each other. And, you know, you're not going to get through that race without looking after each other, without looking after yourself, and with a good kind of team behind the girls. And this is what we had. You know, we kind of basically covered all bases. You know, it's a hard race. I mean, the first 4 days are all near enough 100k. You know, the first day isn't quite so bad because it's not quite so hilly, but the other 3 days are pretty full on, and the weather this year was just roasting. It was like 27, 28 degrees. So very unlike the previous years when it's basically chucked you down with rain every day. So that in itself was, you know, massively challenging because girls were overheating. So in the team car, we were getting called up for feeding with the ice bags down the back of the necks. I mean, it was completely different to anything we've seen all year. And the girls, they just got on with it. I think there was only 5 teams out of the 20 that finished all 5 girls. All the girls finished was a huge pat on the back to them. It certainly shows a certain amount of resilience, that's for sure, because that's a very wearing process. The stage on the Saturday, which was basically from Tremor, went all on Sean Kelly's training roads. That was a brutal stage, just up and down constantly. We kind of positioned ourselves in a place where we could, you know, there was enough time to kind of chill and he just enjoyed the experience of being in a different country. And I think every year I would look forward to doing that race more than any other. And I think that just says it all. And then there was kids that were coming along, and you're going past, obviously on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all the school children are out. They're all out cheering the race on. So, you know, that just obviously gives the riders a buzz, as well as us in the cars. Having kids come over and, you know, mix with the girls, seeing the girls engage with them, because obviously that was them a few years ago. All the positivity we've had on kind of Instagram and everything, from where the girls have been so welcoming to the locals, and to the point actually where one young girl kind of got in touch with her dad and was just so grateful for everything we'd done. Eva, her name was. We had pictures taken. I sent out some kit, and she's now got a bike. So she's put a picture on Instagram wearing the team kit on a new bike, and it's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, the race organisers absolutely love that, because it's all about, you know, the next generation, and it's brilliant. And the girls were unbelievable. They did such a good job. Can't actually wait for next year, really. Just hope the weather stays the same, because I'd rather have the sun than the rain.
Well, we covered a fair bit of ground there, Phil, from the task force to the Rasner Barn. Before we sign off, let's wrap up with a quick look ahead to the coming months, and indeed to the coming season. The Men's Cycle Classic is already confirmed for Sunday, April the 28th, 2024. More immediately, the hill climb season is already well underway, with events like Monsel and others, and will climax this year on October the 29th. The National Hill Climb Championships will be held on the Struggle near Ambleside in the Lake District, in an event organised by Cold Dark North, among others. The National Trophy Series, British Cycling's flagship cyclocross competition, gets underway in Tyne and Wear on October the 7th and 8th, with the first of six rounds before the National Cyclocross Championships on January the 13th and 14th, 2024. And a final reminder, get yourself a ticket for the Rainer Foundation's annual dinner and charity auction, and book yourself an evening in the company of World Tour royalty. Visit therainerfoundation.org/charity dinner. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me. And thank you again to everybody out there for listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.